Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go live in Los Angeles on a Wednesday. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs. It's Wednesday. Be a sub above. Now, 1 hour from now. So we are now in mid-July. 1 hour from now, over the next 2 days, at 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern, I will, and I've spent a lot of time on this because I have no life. Today, I give you my AFC predictions. All the divisions, all the teams, playoff order. Tomorrow, the NFC, but today is the AFC. I am allowed 2 amendments due to trades or injuries before the season. Listen, the Constitution has 27 amendments. I get 2. So I get 2 amendments. I will now, Joy, how did I do last year, for instance, in the AFC?
You did very well.
7 for 7.
That's pretty good.
We nailed all the playoff teams. So when I was with my kids this weekend and I told them I was taking naps, I was actually breaking down the AFC and the NFC, and we'll have it today. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, it's important that you remind everyone that the Constitution has been changed.
It has been.
Several times.
Amendments are okay.
I don't know if everyone knows that.
Yeah, so I'm going to get 2 amendments, and one of them could be the Aaron Rodgers amendment.
That's an important one to hold on to.
Because I don't think there's a chance he will not finish the year in Green Bay, but he'll start it. I want to start with that. So Chris Collinsworth has a podcast, as you'd expect. It's very good. He had Adam Schefter on. He's a very diligent NFL reporter, lives on that phone, baby. He's breaking stories all the time. So when he talked about Brady leaving New England a year before he left, you got to kind of take respect for it and go, put some respect on that. He knows what he's doing. He's talking about Aaron Rodgers right now and the feelings in Green Bay, and here it is.
It just has never sounded like it's about money. I think this is much deeper than that. I think this is, as he himself has alluded to, about people, about culture, about the way the organization is and has run. And I don't know that money addresses that.
I want to talk about this for a second because I think I'm in a rare position. Joy and I are in a rare position. We weren't born in Los Angeles or California. We have bounced around the country. So I have literally changed jobs and moved across the country 3 different times. So I can speak to this. As a driven, somewhat workaholic guy, and Aaron did not get here because he's casual and occasionally throws a football around. Aaron's a grinder. Aaron's a workout guy. Aaron is very committed to football. And I've always thought, and I think Joy is too, I think we're committed to broadcasting. 3 different times, I knew I was leaving before my company did. And even as a grinder, even as somebody that's totally into their job, I couldn't concentrate. I was thinking about the next job while I was in that job, because I didn't want to fail. And I'm thinking about, okay, I got to get prepared. I'm going to save some of my rants. That's a good idea. I'm going to make sure to do that. I couldn't concentrate. My last 6 months at the other place, all I could think about was Fox. Who am I going to hire? What's the set going to look like? Who's going to be on the news desk? What producers? I couldn't concentrate. And I'm a committed guy. I would have rants, and I'd be like, no, I'm going to save that one. That's good. Fox gets that one. And so here's Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is moody when he's happy. He's aloof when he's happy. What's this year going to be like? Like, I look at all this stuff with Green Bay. Really, they're a default champion of this division because there's so much dysfunction. Chicago's pivoting to a new quarterback. Minnesota, we got Kirk Cousins, can't play well in big games. Detroit's a mess. And I think to myself, this was never an ideal fit. Aaron and Green Bay, in the good times, it wasn't ideal. He's very much a contrarian thinker. He's very much an independent thinker. He's California cool, and they wear cheese hats in their 50s. It wasn't ideal. What's it going to be like now? And I'll be on an island, but I do believe that he lost a little bit of trust with his coach, though he'd never say it publicly. Matt LaFleur, the last play that Aaron Rodgers played in Green Bay, his coach took him off the field to kick a field goal against Tom Brady. Trust is hard to repair. I think oftentimes Aaron Rodgers, I would not blame him if he prioritized staying healthy in Green Bay. He doesn't want to, you know, he's not happy. Wouldn't you prioritize throwing the ball away, you know, taking a knee, sliding early? The last thing you want to do is get hurt in Green Bay. I wouldn't blame him. I've been there. You start prioritizing the next place. And that doesn't mean you're not committed to your craft. It's just very human to do that. And I'm on an island, and I'll say this. Nobody believes the trade will happen during the season. But it's very unique in that we got a bunch of things working here. What if Jordan Love is pretty darn good in the preseason? He should be. This is a good O-line, a solid head coach, star receiver, star back. What if Jordan Love's pretty good? What if Drew Lock struggles in the AFC West? Yeah, that's going to happen. And what if Aaron is a little condescending, not all in, temperature in the room is a little cool, not warm. Look at the schedules on this. I know I'm on an island, but look at the schedules on this. If you look at Green Bay's schedule with Aaron, even if Aaron was 90% locked in, this is a schedule that tells me they're going to win. They're going to beat New Orleans in the opener. They're going to beat Detroit. Good luck going to San Francisco. But the Steelers at home, Washington at home, Arizona. It's very possible that Green Bay is a 6-1 start. It's a 6-1 start going to like an Arizona. The trading deadline will be around that Arizona week. Then you look at Denver's schedule. Denver's schedule, again, with Drew Lock. You open at the Giants. Good luck. Now, you'll beat Jacksonville and the Jets, but it's Baltimore. It's at Pittsburgh. It's at Cleveland. It's Washington. It's at Dallas. Those are losses. So, I'll say this. Trading deadline is week 8. Keep your eye on Jordan Love looking solid in preseason. Aaron's the kind of guy that could go into a locker room in Denver immediately. Remember, Vic Fangio's gone if he's under 500. So there's some urgency in Denver. Aaron can be, you know, a little difficult in the good times. What's this going to be like? So I do believe in the trading deadline, there will be discussions to move Aaron to the AFC. Denver will be fairly desperate. The Chargers, many are predicting, are a Super Bowl team, and I'm talking gamblers are into that. We know Kansas City's better. You got a young GM in Denver, an old coach, and a quarterback nobody truly believes in. Keep your eyes on this stuff. I will say I think Aaron Rodgers' trade deadline is a viable move. Of course, by that time, it'll be too late for one of my amendments to my predictions in the NFL, which on 1 hour from now, I'll be doing the AFC today, the NFC tomorrow. So here's another story that came down. So Kawhi Leonard of the Clippers had surgery to repair a partial tear of his right ACL. Here's what's interesting about this. Our worldview on the Clippers forever, fittingly, has been awful franchise. Ridiculous, bad, but we all know that we used to roll our eyes at the Cubs, and then Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon showed up. And then we were like, oh, like 3 years later, they're in the World Series, right? 3 or 4 years later. So you can turn things if you get the right owner. The Ricketts family, Joe Maddon, Theo Epstein, all very smart people. The laughable Cubs went to the great Cubs farm system overnight. And we think that way with the Clippers. Ty Lue had a great playoff series. Steve Ballmer is energized and focused. And they have a lot of people in that front office. I know a lot of them. They're really smart. And Kawhi has a player option. And it's really funny. He could sign for 1 year with the Clippers, $36 million, or 4 years and $180 million. And my guess, he's going to go to the $181 million. He's a California kid. But you know what's interesting? Is that there's this sense that teams are desperate to get stars. But I think with the Suns and Chris Paul, if Chris said, I want 1 year at $40 million, I think they'd take it. I do think they'd take it. If they win the finals, one more, they take it. And I think the Clippers are not a desperate team anymore. And I think Kawhi is so odd and so unique and so different and so nonverbal, which you'd prefer your stars are verbal. I think the Clippers privately would take that 1 year deal for $36 million. They have a new arena in 3 years. They have an energized, focused, rich owner, excellent coach, very good roster. I thought Paul George had a very strong B plus A minus. No, I think he had an A postseason. I thought Paul George, as we thought he would do, had a very good postseason. So it's interesting to watch? Are we looking at kind of the Cubs here, where they were roll your eyes franchise, desperate for anybody? You know, I mean, the Cubs were for a long time, you know, Lou Piniella's interested, we'll sign him forever, right? Like, that's what the Cubs were. And all of a sudden, you kind of wake up one morning and you're like, nah, this really isn't a desperate franchise. This morning in Los Angeles, the Clippers have a much better roster than the Lakers do. The Clippers have what many perceive as a much better front office than the Lakers do. The Clippers have the much richer owner than the Lakers do. And by the way, Paul George, say what you want, is there every day. Anthony Davis, not so much. So I do think if the Clippers privately could choose 4 years with Kawhi or a year, I think they choose a year at this point. I really do. And it speaks well to the growth of the franchise.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Big Ben, this is the story out of Pittsburgh. That's Joy's hometown. A Big Ben reportedly in the best shape of his life, according to sources. According to Ben's camp, he is losing weight. Is his elbow in better shape is the question I worry about. And I've never really thought the Steelers would be better if Big Ben was skinnier. That's not something I've worried about. He's a big guy. You know, the question that begs to be asked is what took so long? Losing weight means you needed to lose weight as a professional athlete. That I think LeBron, Russell Wilson, and Tom Brady and Mahomes have moved past the I've got to lose weight this offseason. So congratulations on only two natty lights after dinner and sit-ups. But this is, you know, this is the classic. You want to sell your house, and you never really invested in it for 20 years. You let the plumbing go, the air conditioning unit, the landscaping, but you put some new paint on the house and you think you're going to fool people and sell it for top dollar. Well, you're not going to fool a savvy investor or a savvy home buyer, and you're not going to fool an inspector because you put on some nice paint. Okay, the bottom line here is Brady and Russell Wilson are committed to film study. They're committed to diets. They're committed to plyometrics. They're committed seven figures annually to being in shape. They're also both highly committed to film study and audible systems and working with coaches. Big Ben, even Jay Glazer, who's got great relationships with players, probably more than any NFL reporter in my life, makes fun of Ben's off-season workout regimen. I'm not sure it can be called that. Brady is a 24/7, 365-day-a-year quarterback, and he is sprinting to the finish. Ben is committed when the whistle blows in camp to when it ends in January, earlier than everybody in Pittsburgh wants. He's limping to the finish line. You can't fool an inspector on a house. You can't fool somebody that knows real estate on a coat of paint. You fool dopes. And you can't fool people who know football because now you're doing sit-ups and you've cut back on your old Milwaukee's after dinner. Now, in 45 minutes, I'll give you my AFC preview, but I'll give you the AFC North now without going into deep explanations. I have the Pittsburgh Steelers as a sub-500 team in third place. And 8 wins, I think, considering the state of their O-line, is being gracious. That's an 8-9 football team.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year-round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Leadership is undervalued. The Suns are in the finals this year, not because they changed their roster. They added a 36-year-old veteran, Chris Paul, who plays about 30 minutes a night. That's it. Leadership, DeAndre Ayton said, I've never played with anybody who challenged me more. Dodgers bring in Mookie Betts. The Dodger players are like, oh my God, lead by example. First in, first around the cage, extra work. It's leadership. Tom Brady, not the fastest, past his prime athletically, though he was never a world-class athlete, goes to Tampa, mostly the same roster, coaches. Tom comes in. We don't really value optimism and leadership and positivity. And that's what Mookie Betts and Brady and Chris Paul do. It's not like Chris Paul's giving you 44 minutes and 39 points. That's not his game. It's not like Brady is extending plays. It's not like Brady has the best arm. You know, Mookie Betts, it's not like Mookie Betts is playing multiple positions. He's the closer or the starting ace. But there is something to be said for constantly lubricating and energizing a locker room. And I thought this was very interesting. You know I love Russell Wilson. The Ringer has a guy named Kevin Clark. We bring him on the show. He's very smart. He interviewed Russell Wilson. And I want you to think about Aaron Rodgers' moodiness and at times sort of condescending nature and snarkiness going into the season. Here's the interview. Just think about being around this. Here is Russell Wilson talking to Kevin Clark, who said, "Hey, you've got a new coordinator this year." And he start and Russell just starts talking. And he goes, "Oh my God, Shane Waldron, amazing mind, super collaborative. We had a lot of fun. It's been an amazing along the journey. Going to throw more and win more games. We're so excited about it. We think we got a chance to win. We're just going to totally go for it." Compare that to Green Bay. Here's Russell talking about players. He goes, "I'm looking forward to DK Metcalf. He's such a young guy. Chris Carson's back. We're so excited to have him. Gerald Everett coming from the Rams, a tremendous football player. How about Dwayne Brown? He's been so dominant since he got here at left tackle. We got a new guard, Gabe Jackson, a physical, dominant player. How about Damian Lewis moving to left guard? I'm so much energy there." These are real quotes. "Jamal Adams, he'll be in his second year for the Seahawks. How great will he be? Bobby Wagner, nobody better in the league than him at his position. Plus, he's a great leader. And how about Quandre Diggs? He can make all the plays. I'm so excited getting the guys back and the fans here." These are real quotes. I'm not making this up. "Everything's an amazing journey. Every day, positive, optimistic, focused." I mean, if you're a player and Russell Wilson's the best player that franchise has ever had, and he's talking about you in the Ringer like that, what does that make you feel? I'm going to go to the weight room. I can't let him down. I mean, if my boss has talked about our staff like this, you would get in early the next day. You'd be like, "Oh my God. Russell Wilson's talking about DK Metcalf. He's talking about Chris Carson. I love him back. Oh, I'm so excited for, oh, my Damian Lewis going to the left side." You're Damian Lewis. You're like, "That's my guy." Compare that to having fun on this golf tournament. I'll figure it out. I don't know. You know, snark, snark, snark. Listen, optimism matters. Chris Paul matters. Mookie Betts, Tom Brady, this stuff. Positivity. Makes you want to work out harder, energy. I know. People say, "Oh, it's a lot of, you know, sometimes Russell Wilson's over the top." I'll take it. I mean, Tom Brady eats avocado ice cream, won't drink a beer in a season. It's a little over the top. It works. People want to be around positive people. They energize us. They focus us. They make us feel like guilty for not being in the weight room earlier, not working harder, and not putting the time in. I love that's who he is. Think it's fake or not, that's who he is 24/7.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
We're going to start with the AFC East. I think this was one of the easier ones at the top to pick. I have the Buffalo Bills winning at 12-5. Miami, New England were more difficult. I love everything Miami's doing. The coach, the GM, the defense, the special teams were exquisite. I even think they've upgraded offensively. I don't love the quarterback position, but I didn't last year either, and they got to 10-6. This is a better roster than a year ago. I'm not sure it's a better division than a year ago. I have them finishing second, the Patriots third at 9-8. The more I think about New England, the more I hear about the Mac Jones love affair, I don't know what they are. They also, historically, Belichick starts slow in September, and they've got 9 new free agents. This could be really choppy for New England in September. I think Miami will come out with a bang. Tua will be energized. I'll take the Patriots third at 9-8. The Jets, I think, will be mostly a mess. I do not believe in Zach Wilson. I think he is the one quarterback out of the draft I have questions about. I see a lot of Johnny Manziel. I see a little bit of arrogance. I see a smaller athlete who can make plays off schedule. But this roster, though they've improved significantly on the offensive line because of the last two drafts, Joe Douglas, GM, has done a very good job. I don't see the kind of playmakers you need. So that's the AFC East. AFC North, again, little tough at the top. I'll take Baltimore 11-6 over Cleveland 10-7, Steelers 8-9, Cincinnati 6-11. For the record, I think Cincinnati will be a very competitive 6-11. I think it's a pretty tough division. I took Baltimore over Cleveland for a couple reasons. One, I feel that Baltimore has a quarterback who's won 80% of his games. He keeps getting better every year. I feel they were a really good team that just added pieces that fit in nicely and seamlessly. With Cleveland, I'm a little worried that the movie poster, OBJ, Clowney, is better than the movie itself. They've got a new secondary. I think they could be choppy a little bit in September. In April, Sheldon Richardson, a very good interior lineman, was a cap casualty. They bring in Clowney, who again can be explosive, but disappears in big games. Sheldon Richardson is a man. He's gone. I don't love that. Again, this could be an amendment. I want to see the preseason. The Browns have the best offensive line in football, and it is hard not to make the playoffs with the best offensive line in football, and it's no joke. It is. It may not be as good as Dallas about 5 years ago, where you got three Hall of Famers, but it is good. So, and I don't buy Pittsburgh. The offensive line now has regressed badly. Well, they got a bunch of good defensive players. They've had that for 10 years. They've had a good defense for 10 years. That's never the issue. Can they get their act going offensively? That's the AFC North. All right, AFC South. Bad division with one good team. Colts 11-6. I don't buy the Titans. Arthur Smith leaves. I think he's a tremendous coordinator. Don't know if he works as a head coach. Ryan Tannehill regresses. Two, Derrick Henry dependent. I still don't trust the pass rush or the secondary. 8-9 Titans. Jacksonville's fun to watch. Little bit of a mess defensively, 6-11. And nobody can tell me they trust Houston. I don't know what the hell's going on with that franchise, 4-13. AFC West. Chiefs are going to win the division. That's not really the question. Now, a lot of bettors in Vegas have the Chargers as the surprise team in the NFL. I have them at 9-8. It's not a shot at anybody, but their offensive line has three new starters, including a rookie. Justin Herbert is unbelievable, but he didn't face road crowds. This will be the first time in the NFL. Not that he would step back, but it's something. Also, we have a rookie head coach who's not been coaching football very long. I have Denver and the Raiders at 7-10. The Raiders' offensive line is significantly been downgraded from a year ago. They have lost really good players and now depend on the seemingly ageless Richie Incognito. And I think Fangio is in danger of losing this locker room if they don't start quick in Denver, and the schedule is tough. So that's my predictions. My playoff picture looks like this in the AFC. Kansas City plays Buffalo early at Arrowhead. Chiefs are the number one seed. Bills are the number two seed with the same record, 12-5. Baltimore and Indianapolis play. It's Monday night in Baltimore. Ravens win that game. Ravens, Colts 11-6, but the Ravens' benefit of winning that game are the third seed, Colts 4. Cleveland is easily the best wild card team in the AFC. Miami, then the Chargers. When I started hearing these stories about Cam and Mac Jones, I moved the Patriots out. I don't have to love the last couple teams that make the playoffs. I don't love the Tua situation, but I will say this. He's focused. He's in shape. He's the healthiest he's been. And I love everything else around him. They have absolutely upgraded the pieces around him. The Chargers, I think, are a football team that could get very, very good post-Thanksgiving. New coach, new O-line, schedule early could be tough. But I have a feeling the Chargers are going to be one of those seven seeds that nobody wants to play. That, you know, and they've shown an ability with Justin Herbert. They can play with a lead. They can play behind. They can win in shootouts. But again, they have not been good. The Chargers haven't. They have disappointed us a lot over the last several years, right? So here we go. I went 7-7 last year in the AFC. Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, Colts, Browns are really good football teams. Chargers, I think, will be. Miami is, but a hold at quarterback, in my opinion. There you go.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Michael Redd's sitting there. Can you get me on the air already? I'm done with your stupid NFL takes. Let's bring him on. 12 years in the NBA, 11 with the Bucks, an all-NBAer, gold medal in the 2008 Summer Olympics. Michael, sometimes I got to talk football even during the finals. I apologize for that.
No worries at all. Go Browns.
There you go. You're a Columbus guy, by the way. You just opened, I heard, a new yoga studio in Columbus, so good for you. You have seamlessly moved into retirement. I want to talk about first thing, the Bucks. It's a very old physical team. The Suns are a young finesse team. They like fast tempo. They're small. They're thin. Mikal Bridges barely 210 pounds. The Bucks are Brooke Lopez and Giannis. It's 250. It's PJ Tucker. It's Bobby Portis. I kind of feel like in this finals, Michael, if it's half court and situational, I like the Bucks. If Monty Williams can increase the tempo, I like the Suns. That's how I view it. How do you view it this morning?
It's funny you mentioned that because I was thinking about the game tonight, and I'll be there tonight at the game. The Bucks made their size centric, and they became more dominant in game three because of their size and physicality. And that's the one advantage that they have. When Ayton was out the game, you could see how the Bucks imposed their physicality on the Suns. You're right. The Suns are up and down, fast pace. And so the Bucks figured out, you know, we need to make our offense big centric. And they did that and did a great job. And Giannis was just dominant, and primarily because Ayton was out the game.
Yeah, even Drew Holiday is a physical point guard. Yep. Bobby Portis, PJ Tucker. You know, Giannis is an interesting player. First of all, he's a wonderful guy. He works hard in his game. The free throw stuff, he's not going to be the first big that's not great at the free throw line. Tim Duncan for years, Michael, as you know, struggled at the free throw line. But he can be streaky. There's moments he hits him. Would you be reluctant to have him on the floor, Michael, in the last 3 minutes of a big game? Or would you just be like, you know what? He's not Ben Simmons. He's not afraid to shoot. Would you be a little concerned if we got to a game six or a game seven? We're tied late. Would you pull him off the floor? How would you do that?
Speaking of Giannis?
Yeah.
No. It's the moment, right? And as a player, you adjust to the moment. You rise to the moment. And he's shown that in spurts throughout his the series especially. So, no. You trust him. You trust your best player. In those moments, he's made improvements at the free throw line, as he did the other night. You have no choice, I think, at that moment, but to trust him in those moments.
Yeah. You know, Michael, your career is interesting. I mentioned it before you came on last segment. It reminds me a little of Gary Payton, where Gary came in for a year or two, and people were like, yeah, it's just not explosive. And then a year or two later, Gary Payton's an all-star, and Michael Redd's an all-star. In fact, you had a year you averaged 27. We have a sense in the first year, this guy's going to be an all-star. You and Payton explode. And I look at DeAndre Ayton, Michael. I thought he was a bust first year. I was like, this doesn't work. And now you're like, oh, my Lord. Take me back to your career. What was the spark that turned you from four a game to 20?
I think confidence in myself. No matter where I was drafted late in the second round. But the one thing that I had that Ayton has is great leadership, great veterans. I had great veterans in Lindsey Hunter, Ray Allen, Irvin Johnson, Sam Cassell, guys that really, really poured into me and mentored me. And so Ayton has a Chris Paul who's been big for him this year in a lot of ways. There are certain things that players can do that coaches can't do as far as veterans. And so that's what was the big beneficiary for me. I had tremendous veterans that I really learned from, and my career took off from there.
For the record, you played in the Olympics with Chris Paul. Now, many have said, Michael, many have said he's tough, he's verbal. I mean, I've gone to games when he was a Clipper. I would sit courtside, and I would hear him. And I'm like, Blake Griffin had tuned him out. So when you played with him, did you sense that he's not for everybody?
He was young at the time. So he was 22, 23 at the time, and so he was very irreverent. He was himself, but he was very irreverent to myself, Jason Kidd, Kobe, Tayshaun Prince, Carlos Boozer. We were kind of older heavy, you know, at the time, too. So we had a good balance between young and older, And he was Chris. He was a leader, vocal on the court, but he wasn't what people say he is now as far as being more tough and not acquired taste. But I enjoyed him. He was my little brother. We had a great relationship when we played together those 3 years. Did a lot together. Our fathers are close to this day still. So he's terrific. He's a winner and he's a leader.
Yeah. I want to talk about the Olympic experience because you went to Beijing, won a gold medal 2008. You went 8-0. And I was saying this, first of all, the construction of Olympic teams is interesting in America, where Team Australia, you know, the Spanish team for years and years, it was the same guys. Australia, you know, we have so much talent in America, Michael. We just have new guys going constantly, and it can be choppy. We also don't, this team doesn't have a rim protector per se. Some guys didn't want to go after the condensed season. They didn't want to go play in the Olympics. Our team has struggled a little bit in the first three games they've played. Is the world catching up to us, or is it a matter of, you know, we keep throwing different guys on this team? You can't create chemistry in a week in Vegas. I mean, where do you land on their early struggles?
Oh, man, great question. I think the one thing that we had from our experience that Jerry Colangelo and Coach Krzyzewski established was stability at the top. Jerry was clearly in control. Mike was in control. In 2005, we all had a conversation with Jerry Colangelo, and Jerry was very direct in saying, hey, listen, this is going to be a three-year process. Is everybody committed? And we all, to a man, said we're committed. And so we had the cohesion, we had familiarity, we had a chemistry that made winning the gold medal also more sweet. So as much as we loved that moment of winning the gold medal, we knew it took 3 years to get to that point. So I don't know if this current team has had that. And the world has certainly caught up, for sure. The world is advanced as far as basketball skills. We in America, our AAU system, that's a whole nother conversation for another day. We're athletic, we're gifted in so many different ways, but the world is certainly caught up as far as learning how to play the game, skill, all of that. And so we should be surprised to see challenging. We were challenged when we played Spain in the championship gold medal game. So I'm surprised that we're losing still, but I'm not surprised that the world is caught up.
You know, I said this yesterday. 15 years ago in America, Michael, our football and basketball cultures were the exact same. You were ridden hard by a good high school coach. You went to college for 3 to 4 years and were ridden hard by a good college coach. And when you went to the NBA, you had to be pretty respectful to the coach because he still had power. The football culture is still that today. The basketball culture is different. It's more transitional. You don't even play high school. You have an AAU coach for a couple years that wants you on the team. You have a college coach for a year that will do anything to get you. And we have a league now where you walk into this league, there's too much money. You'll get rid of the coach in an hour. Stan Van Gundy's gone. I said this the other day. I think we're creating better basketball players, but less resilient basketball players, is that they are bothered by Twitter. I can't see Michael Redd or Michael Jordan being bothered by Twitter. Maybe I'm wrong. It's a generational opinion. But do you worry a little bit that the player, it's always been a labor-driven league. The employees, the players have always had the power in this league. That's, and when I was a kid and Spencer Haywood, you know, I can go back to the 70s. But are you worried that sometimes now it's so much about the players that they're not as resilient as they used to be?
I think you have the balance of both. And you did a great job of articulating that, Colin, as you always do. It's a different generation. We've all said that in the last few years. I had a dad that was challenging to me in a great way. He grew me up to become a man. When I felt things were tough in college, he said, shut up and go listen to your coach. NBA. Dad, this is hard. Shut up, fight through it, get through it, show some grit, resiliency, work hard, do what you're told to do, and get through it. And then I had leverage as a player, too, within the organization. I was allowed to have a voice with our GM and with our owner.
Yeah.
I think you can do both. I think you can utilize and leverage your leverage and your influence on the team, but at the same time, be subordinate to the coach and be coachable. I think that's a lost art in today's game, where people are coachable and not so easily offended. go work hard, go get better, go do what the coach asked you to do, and you'll see better results. Now, I don't know if we had that as much as we did in my time.
Yeah. By the way, you're one of those guys, the game has changed. The game would have been great to you, right? You ever look at this and think 26 a game? Hell, I'd have averaged 36 a game. You were built. You were born too soon, Michael, because you were built for this game. You ever think that?
Steve Kerr came up to me a couple years ago and said, you would flourish in this era. You had to be efficient, you know, in my time.
Yes.
At the three ball, because if you missed two or three in a row, you'd come out the game.
That's right.
That's how it was. So I only shot maybe, I think, four threes a game, maybe five. And I was more of a scorer, obviously. And people know me as a three-point shooter, but I was a scorer. But different. And then it was more physical, right? The game was more physical. You can get away with more back then. So in this day and age now, I do think about it and wonder. I talked to my wife about it, my friends about it. Like, man, what would I do in this era of where it's okay to shoot 15 to 20 threes in the game? So it's a different time. I celebrate these guys. They're doing remarkable things. But I certainly respect those who came before them and became before me. They just have more leeway now.
Yeah. What a pleasure. Michael, you've done so well for yourself. I love having you on the show. Good luck with your yoga studio in Columbus, Ohio. You're a former Buckeye. Let me look at this up real quick here. I think you were drafted 43rd. How about that? And became an all-NBA dude. Good for you, Michael. It's great seeing you. Thanks for coming on. And go Browns.
Colin, thank you, buddy. Thank you, man. Appreciate you, buddy.